designed to encourage, empower, and educate real estate professionals by sharing best practices from business leaders that are proven winners. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and this is Calibrate Real Estate.
We'll go. Broadcasting from the Mile High City, you are watching and tuning in on iTunes to the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. This is the podcast designed for real estate professionals where we encourage, empower, and educate you by sharing best practices with industry leaders. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and I'm so delighted to have a good friend, Mary Lane Sloan, on with me today. I met Mary Lane about 2 months ago through my good friend, Brad Allen. Brad has been on this podcast before and is a 30 under 30 recipient. Brad and Mary Lane are partners within a company called The Art of Real Estate based in Columbia, South Carolina. Mary Lane, among many distinctions, is a realtor. So she's both a partner in the business, but she also practices day-to-day selling homes. And probably most importantly, outside of work, she's a devoted wife and mother of two children, two daughters. So Mary Lane, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Of course. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So the thing I always love to ask, and I think it's really important as we dive into our topic for this episode, which is going to be about working moms, but I'd love to hear how you got your start in real estate. I was reviewing your bio and chatting with you when we met in South Carolina that you were a teacher before you were in real estate. So how did you make that transition from the teaching industry into real estate?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So growing up, I always wanted to be a teacher. So went to Presbyterian College, got a degree in elementary education, came back to Columbia and started teaching fourth and fifth grade. Meanwhile, got married to my husband. We bought our first house and it was a hot mess. We did use a real estate agent, but it was a mess. So we bought our first home, and then we decided we wanted to buy some investment properties. And again, the agents we kept encountering were, it was comical. It was just not a very good experience. So we finally decided, hey, if we are going to be committed to buying some investment properties, you know, it's probably a good idea for one of us to have our license anyway, just to make sure we really understand what we're doing and we don't have to like fully rely on somebody else. And so love my husband, he's a very smart man, but he has severe ADD. So if one of us was gonna go get our license, it was gonna be me. So I was still teaching and I went on the weekends and got my license. And then, so I got my license, it was early May. So school had just wrapped up and I was really naive at that point and thought, oh, you know, I'll just sell real estate for the summer and just be a part-time gig. And here we are 10 years later, still selling real estate and a co-owner of a real estate firm. So it was a big old accident, but now I just teach big kids about houses.
Well, I love that. And I think that there's so much discussion about real estate sales and what does it take to become, you know, a high producing salesperson. And the coaching program that I'm a part of is a big believer in that a good salesperson is someone that serves and someone that finds what their clients need and they're able to make that happen. And they specifically say that good salespeople have the heart of a teacher. And I think that as I reflect on my three kiddos, my wife and I will go to their parent teacher conferences and, you know, the teachers don't tell them what to do. They show them what to do and they help them find the answer. And sometimes it's really funny, kind of in a high pitched voice, as the teacher will, you know, kind of lead them along and coax them along as second graders and first graders, especially for our kids. But what happens is they don't give them the answer. And then we find that when we're here at home doing homework with our kiddos, you know, it's the same thing. You've got to help them learn how to find the answer. And there's several different ways to do that. So I think, I love that you say that you just teach big people. And I think that's great. And I think it's true to what is natural for you. And I think for anybody that's in a sales environment, you should do what's natural. Otherwise it'll feel fake or phony. So I think that's
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you. I don't feel like I'm in sales at all.
Well, and you clearly aren't. You've got that servant mentality where you're there to help your clients and whatever their decisions are going to be up to them. And then you're just helping them through the process, which I think is great. My next question is kind of tapping into the mindset of a working mom. The majority of realtors across the nation are female. And I think in our society, we've got a really positive movement that's been happening for decades with working moms. So I've got to ask, how do you fit it all in as an entrepreneur and a realtor and then, you know, a mom and a spouse, mm-hmm. you know, how do you find time to fit it all in? I find that especially important for a household with two working parents.
Yeah. So, I think it's a constant struggle. There's got to be a lot of grace there. And I think that for me, time blocking has really been a savior because I'm just a big proponent in, you know, you have two options as an entrepreneur. You can run your schedule or you can let your schedule run you. I've seen other professionals in my industry who have let their schedule run them and they look very haggard and they tend to be going in a million directions and they just seem like they're literally out of control. So I think one of the things that I took from the classroom, because as a teacher, you have to, you know, plan down to the last minute of the day, right, to get it all in. So I think that's something that I brought from the classroom to this profession, which has really helped me feel and operate more like a professional. Not only has it helped me in my business, you know, I tell all the agents in my firm, like, you know, pick any other profession. If you wanted to go meet with an architect, if you wanted to go meet with a physician, if you wanted to meet with an attorney, you have to make an appointment, right? I mean, most 99% of the people out there understand that to go meet with some sort of professional, you're going to have to make an appointment. So you don't really run up against that objection very much. And the ones that resist, they're probably going to be a time suck anyway, and you should just let them suck somebody else's time. But I think when it comes to being a mom, so one thing I do is every day on my calendar, I block 5:30 to 7:30 as mom duty. And everybody in my firm knows that if you need to schedule something between that time, you just need to ask me first because we all share calendars. And so you can set anything on anybody's calendar, but I've time blocked that. And I'm very open with my clients. My kids have an active following on Instagram and Facebook. My clients know from 5:30 to 7:30, I got to go to my second job. And they're sticklers for punctuality, right? So from 5:30 to 7:30, it's very rare that I'm going to be able to pick up my phone, but you know, I will get to you before then and I will get to you after then, but that's sacred time of my life that I'm not going to get back. You know, most people understand that.
Well, and something I've observed personally from having sat in on your company meeting when I was in South Carolina is that you really are a leader, obviously as a partner. That's a term that people would look at, but when they see you actually interact with your company, you do lead, and I think you do it in a wonderful way. And I think moms are leaders of their own families. And one of my good friends, who was a 30 under 30 like Brad and I, has said that she's got two jobs, and you just said it as well: the job of a mom and the job of an entrepreneur that's leading a team. And she's like, I'm the CEO of both of those businesses. Yep. And it's no knock on her husband, but she's like, you know, my husband, who's an engineer, expects to come home and kind of take a load off, maybe kind of in the older fashion type of way. And as a working realtor mom, she's like, I'm going. And so I think that the next question I have for you is probably the most important. When everybody's in bed, how do you start your day at the beginning of the day? Because I find that very successful entrepreneurs wake up early and they typically take the day by storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. So I'm usually up pretty much every day around 5, and I go exercise. That's what I do. I've found that if I want to do anything for myself, I've got to do it before the rest of the world wakes up, because once the world's up, somebody somewhere is going to need something from me, right? So I also know that I'm going to have a better energy level. I'm going to have more patience for everybody if I can just get that workout done that morning. So then I usually go work out. I come home. The kids are starting to get up. So we spend some time together in the morning. We get dressed. We eat breakfast. We go to school. I come home, you know, shower and put all this together. Usually in the office by 8 or 9, somewhere in there. Just depends on if I get caught on the phone early at home. But, you know, once I get to the office, I try to knock out any of the emails that have come into my inbox. I try to live by the, you know, only touch it once rule. You know, so I'm either going to, if I open an email or a piece of mail, or if I have some task, I'm either going to delegate it, take care of it, or I'm going to mark it as unread so that I know at the end of the day, my goal at the end of the day is to clear out that inbox every day so that, cause you know, more is going to come in overnight, so that you can just start to tackle it in chunks during the day.
Yeah, I think that that's great. I'm very similar. I start my day early, and I can, this is a testament to Mary Lane. She's not kidding. I'm in Denver, 2 hours behind. I got a text message at 3:30 this morning. I was feeling a little under the weather, and I wake up early anyways. Brad will joke when I talk to him that I'm usually up at 4 or 4:30 texting him back and forth. And so I got a text message from her right on the dot at like probably 5:15 Eastern time. And so I think that's important to have that alone time. And I think for a lot of people, especially the physiology of getting a good workout in and, and treating your body right, fueling it correctly, and making sure that that you're taking care of yourself, I think is real important. The thing I also liked about that is that, you know, some people kind of have a real hard, like, hey, I'm in the office at 8 or 7:45 or whatever. I like the idea that, you know, hey, I'm going to get to the office at 8:30 or 9 or whenever I get there. And then when I get there, I'm really working hard to reduce some of the email and take care of that. But I'm handling the important things first. I'm going to make sure I get my workout in, obviously spend time with my family, get the kids out the door, get my husband out the door, and then I'm hitting the office. And in real estate, you know, a lot of our business is handled in later hours of the day and then on weekends. And so I think it's really important that you've set up your day to succeed for you. I think that's great.
One other little thing that I do that I've shared with some of my other other agents that are also working moms, because that's constantly the question I get, especially for people who are looking to transition into real estate, is, gosh, am I going to work every weekend? I'm going to miss, you know, all, you know, the t-ball games and the basketball games and the dance recitals. Again, I'm a big proponent of time blocking. So on the weekends, obviously in our market, certain seasons are busier than others. But I try to either work all day Saturday or all day Sunday. So I will work one day, like when I'm out showing or meeting with people. Obviously you're going to take emails and calls whenever you can. But, and I find that most people go, oh, wow, okay, that makes it doable. That makes it not seem like I'm going to lose all my weekends. And so, you know, if my child has a dance recital on Saturday, I'm going to load everybody up on Sunday. And so that has worked really well for me.
Yeah, that's huge. And it gives your client the option. And just like you said, as a doctor's office, if you're thinking about other professional industries, which real estate is for professionals. Mm-hmm. And I think that for you to say, I can help you out on Saturday or I can help you out on Sunday, but I really can't do both. Or I've, you know, Saturday is my day this week. And I've found, you know, as a working dad myself, I say to my clients very often, you know, hey, I've got to clear this with my wife and with my family. And if I can't see you on a Saturday, it doesn't mean someone else can't help you and serve you while I'm doing something on a Saturday. But I always am very careful about setting things up on the weekend. One thing I know from working with you and Brad and kind of consulting and speaking with Brad is that your team is very deliberate about which days your properties go on the market. And we didn't really talk about this much in our prep, but I just know it as a flow of the art of real estate in Columbia, South Carolina, that you systematize and time block the way that your business is done. And do you mind just chatting about that for just a moment on when your business comes on the market and how you make the rhythm of your Thursday, Friday, and Saturday happen?
For sure. So here in our market, statistically, the best day for a house to hit the market is Friday for two reasons. The first is it's going to go live on the MLS, right? So if there are agents that are currently working with buyers that have, you know, like the saved search, every agent, even part-time agents, are going to pull the hot sheet on Friday, right? So they're going to be able to say, hey, Kyle, you've been looking for this great 3-2 over in Shandon, and look, this one just hit the market. Well, Kyle, you're going to look on Zillow and Realtor.com and be like, oh, I don't see it on the market yet. Wow, my agent's a genius. I've got like an exclusive in, right? So it drives up a little anxiety for that first weekend for agents that are exclusively working with buyers. And then the buyers that aren't working with agents yet, but are kind of like looking on their own, you know, once Zillow, Trulia, Realtor.com, once they put it through the smell test to make sure we haven't committed any fair housing violations and it is a real house, it tends to roll over like that Sunday or sometimes Monday. Then they're like, oh, wow, look at this new house. And, you know, the buyers that are looking without agents tend to do a little bit more due diligence on their end before they make an appointment to go see the house. So they're going to like Google the owner. They're going to call their mom. They're like, hey, mom, don't you know so-and-so that lives down the street in Shandon? What do they know about this house? You know, they're going to drive by. You know, and so then by that following weekend, if it's worth it to them, they'll contact either the listing agent or an agent to show them. So you really set your seller up nicely between two weekends to drive up the anxiety with two different buyer pools. And it's worked really well for us.
That's awesome. And I think it's, mm-hmm. it's just, again, another testimony to the fact that your whole team, your whole company that you've built has treated this business mm-hmm. not like it's an accident. It's on right. purpose. It's intentional. It's professional. Yes. And so the interaction that occurs is that someone works with you and they know that you've got a plan. Mm-hmm. A lot of yeah. people are winging it in our industry. And I think that's where some real estate agents get the knock that they're not professional or that mm-hmm. they're just simply kind of bumping along. And I've found that really they aren't successful because they're not treating it like it's a business. So as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. I think that there are all sorts of technology advances that we've seen in our industry. But then I'd say, as you couple that with being a working mom, you know, are there some technological advances that you say is like your hacks or the things that you really yeah. rely on to help make your life easier? As you're both at work and at home trying to yeah. make things happen in real estate.
Yeah. So you might giggle, but really the game changer for me has been the Shipt app that Publix okay. has. Yeah. I don't know if they have it in your market, but I can fill out my grocery list and I can say what time I want it delivered. And then somebody goes and does the grocery shopping at Publix and then they bring it to me.
That you know, it's awesome. My wife is a stay-at-home mom. She worked mm-hmm. for 7 years for a corporation as an analyst. And she still does that because she's a big proponent of efficiency. So she yeah. says, look, I know I like to shop. And when I have yeah. some time to walk around, I do, but mm-hmm. I have my things that I always need to go. And so they get into the yes. queue and it's just a regular yes. order. And whether it's through Amazon or right. they've got the drive side pickup that you just go mm-hmm. curbside pickup and mm-hmm. they just bring it on out there. And if, you know, if you got little ones that you don't want to yeah. get out of the car. Yeah, and I remember that. Do that on the weekend yes. with my kids to give my wife a break. You know, I'd bring the kids in and just navigating the parking lot's a nightmare. So, right. so as you're working, I think that's great. Are there any other things? You talked about time blocking. You talked about the calendar. And I know mm-hmm. from working with your team that you guys are a big advocate of Google Calendar, but just yes. some other technology things that you use to be efficient.
Yes. So, our family uses Google Calendars for everything. So, I mean, you know, we've got dance recitals on there. I've got my husband's basketball games on there. He's got like, you know, my work schedule on there. I mean, that's huge too, because then, you know, I don't have to text and be like, hey, can you do dinner tonight? I can just look at the calendar and be like, we're doing dinner tonight. You know, another one, I don't even know if this counts as technology, but I think family dinners are very important. And it's very hard. I mean, my husband works too, for two working parents to, you know, get the kids, get home and make dinner and sit down at a table. So one thing we committed to do was HelloFresh. I know there's like Blue Apron, a whole yeah. bunch of those, but HelloFresh has a very friendly app where you can plan your meals. And so we get it delivered and it's three meals a week. So that's three meals a week that we are committed to sitting down as a family. The directions are super easy. So, I mean, even my 8-year-old can follow them. So the rule is whoever gets home first starts cooking. Most of the meals are pretty easy to make. They're delicious. They're very nutritious. So that's not really an app, but that's just been something that's been very important to our family, is that in the midst of the chaos that we live in, we will commit to sitting down at least three nights a week to go over our highs and lows and just, you know, bond as a family.
That's
and it
so
makes
cool.
it easy because everything's already prepared. You don't have to go to the grocery store. It's just all there. And it's, I mean, 30 minutes is the longest it's ever taken us to make a meal.
Well, and what it does is it enables you to focus on what's important, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think what happens is that so many people, and you mentioned the struggle at the beginning of our discussion. It is a struggle because I think people have this certain ideal in their minds of what it is to be a mom or what it is to be mm-hmm. a dad. And that might be an ideal from the 60s or from the 70s mm-hmm. or, you know, from some bygone generation. And so what I think occurs is that people say, well, I have to be there making some meal from scratch. Right. And you know, if you can do that on a Sunday, that's wonderful. Great. And there's nothing yeah. wrong with that. But also don't make your life more complicated than it needs to be. Embrace the technology that we have. Right. And so you've got different apps that you use. And I think it's got to fit in the way that it needs to fit in. And I think mm-hmm. you focus in on what's important. And so whether it's, you know, with money, it's a budget. That's a plan for your money. Mm-hmm. With time, it's a calendar. And it's use a calendar, have it be something that's openly communicated. And I know one other app that your office uses is Slack. That's something yeah. I learned and we've implemented in my own office immediately after it came back. Yeah. And Slack's been phenomenal. So that mm-hmm. what we've found is that my calendar was the warehouse for everyone's appointments. Right. And so what would occur is I couldn't see anything. We need somewhere to warehouse it all and keep my calendar clean enough so yeah. I knew where I was supposed to go. So it's just we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg on what Slack can do. But I think those are some great, very reasonable apps for people to use. And I like that. I really do. Now, I think as a former teacher, obviously as a working mom, but as a successful realtor, you've had clients that have chosen to work with you. And that's obviously because it sets you apart from other real estate professionals. We've spoken about this a little bit on how you have set up your business, but what are some things that you would say your clients say you do really well and why they continue to come back to you?
Mm-hmm. So I think, first of all, I'm a good listener. I think sometimes people just want to be heard and they just need to kind of talk things out. You know, I'm sure this happens to you, but you'll sit down with a couple and they're like, okay, we want, you know, a 3-2 and it has to have a 2-car garage and here's our budget and here's where we want to be. And I'm like, okay. So I'm hearing that the non-negotiable in all of this is a 2-car garage. Yes, we will not buy it. It does not have a 2-car garage. Okay. So we start looking and then inevitably they fall in love with the house. And what does it not have? A 2-car garage, right? So I just like to tell people up front, you know, like I'm going to listen and I'm going to observe more than I'm going to talk in the beginning. Then I'll start to advise you. But a lot of times you don't know what you want until we get into this process. So I'm going to do a lot of listening and observing at the beginning. So I want to know what you like and what you don't like. You will not hurt my feelings if you don't like a house I send you. You will not hurt my feelings if we walk through a house and you're like, ugh, because it helps me to know what you like and what you don't like. So I think that's refreshing to people, you know, not coming at them as, I try to take more of an advisory role in the buying and selling process. You know, when people are buying or selling, they're really in a transition. So my job is to help manage that transition, right? And I think if you can come at it from that point, I'm really managing this transition for you. I'm gonna give you the tools and the information you need so that you can make the best decisions for you and your family, and then I'm going to try to make it as stressful as possible. But I'd be lying to you if I said this was going to be stress-free, right? But I think if you look at it that way, we're really helping somebody with one of, if not the biggest transitions in their life. Then I think they're able to connect with you and really value you instead of just seeing you as somebody who wants a commission check at the end of the day.
And that's because you're an advisor and it's because you listen, and listening instills trust. And I'd like to share a quote. Mary Lane has so many different testimonials on her website of people that have enjoyed working with her. But this one comes from Amanda. It says, "Mary Lane made each process so much easier than I expected. She is so knowledgeable about the buying and selling process, but also about builders in the Columbia real estate market." It's kind of specific to that market, but I love this next thing that she says. "I trusted completely that she would help me make the right decision." I almost tripped over that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to accentuate on that I trusted completely that she would help me. And I think that where people get goofed up in our industry is that they make it all about themselves. And the reality here is you are a guide. You are an advisor at one of the most critical periods of someone's life. It's going to be very stressful regardless of how good you are. And our job as a realtor is to try to do the job in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of stress and inform people along the way. I have a client that is one of my mentors. He was a developer for many years, and we were hashing out a negotiation, and he said to me, he said, "Kyle, you know what? As a successful realtor, I've learned," and he wasn't a realtor himself at that time, but just working with a lot of realtors, he said, "You're an emotional shock absorber." He's like, "A lot of the things I'm going to say to you, I don't necessarily need you to continue to pass along. It's more just, I want to have a sounding board." Mm-hmm. And so I think that advisory approach is really important. And that was captured in Amanda's comment about you. And I think that, that again, it instills trust. And I think that's what is going to set you apart from the agent that's relying on another piece of real estate technology. There's all sorts of different apps that the real estate community worries about. Is it going to take away our industry? Is it going to take away our ability to produce? And I think that the way I look at it is that as infrequent as it is for someone to buy and sell a home, if you're an advisor, if you're an expert, and if you listen to what people want, you're going to continue to have a job. You're going to continue to have a career. And there are going to be some that fall away because they're not taking that approach. But I think you really hit on it. The advisory approach is really the important one. Mm-hmm. So We've talked a lot about your success. I've found that every person that's been successful is in some way standing on a mountain of failure, myself included. The reason why I have this podcast called the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast, and the reason why the company that I own is called Calibrate Real Estate, is the word calibrate means to literally iterate. It means to make changes, and it's used in science. It's used in the military when you've got a desired result and you're just slightly off of that. What corrections can we make? And I think what happens is when you're a professional, sometimes people have a mistake and they see that as a personal failure, and they almost wear it in such a way that they're like, I'm a failure, instead of, it just didn't turn out the way that I thought. So how have you learned how to really deal with a mistake and realize that failure is part of the process?
Yeah, well, so I'm going to credit my parents for that. they did a really good job, I think, growing up, helping us, you know, from walking to running to broken hearts in high school to not getting into the college you wanted to get into, just having the mindset of a failure is not a permanent no, it's a not yet, right? So, you know, this didn't work, but it hasn't worked yet, which means that's the positive spin on I can do it differently. Now I might have to figure out what I need to do it differently, but there's still the potential of this working out down the road. I just read a great book by Angela Duckworth called Grit. I don't know if you've read it, but it's
heard really, about it.
It's so good, but it really is talking about changing your mindset so that it's always a growth mindset. And then I think failure doesn't become so daunting and so permanent. I feel like failure is like permanent. It's like, I didn't do that. I didn't get that. And now there's nothing I can do about it. But if you start looking at, you know, failure as a challenge or having the not yet mindset, then it's really not that scary to get back up and try again. You know, one of the things that I do, it's scary to do, but I think because I was a teacher and I was big on differentiated instruction, which meant you constantly had to be assessing, right? So how am I going to get better if I don't know what I am not doing well? So when I go on a listing appointment, I always follow up with a handwritten thank you note. If I don't get the listing, I ask them, you know, I'm always trying to grow as a professional. I'm always trying to get better. And if you would be willing to give me some feedback on what I could do different, I would, you know, really appreciate it. 9 times out of 10, they'll tell me. Sometimes it's something I can't do anything about. You know, sometimes it's like, well, we decided to go with our cousin. Great. You know, I can't be your cousin all of a sudden, right?
Right.
But one thing that I've noticed is, the more I've asked that question, obviously the more confident I have been in asking that question. A lot of times people will tell me like, hey, you know, we decided to go with so-and-so because they're our cousin, but we were really impressed with your presentation and we will pass your name along. I've actually gotten business referrals from people that I didn't get their business from. And one person even told me, you know, I didn't initially go with you, but the fact that you called and asked for feedback made me, you know, really reconsider my decision. I've already signed the listing paperwork, but I'm going to continue to pass your name out along because that showed me that you really cared about bettering yourself as a professional. So, you know, I try really hard not to look at things as a permanent failure, but as a, okay, that didn't work. What could I do different in hopes that it would work well the next time?
Yeah, I love your examples. I love the fact that you talk about Duckworth's book, Grit, which is a phenomenal book and has gotten a lot of traction. There's a book years prior by John C. Maxwell called Failing Forward, and it's all about how to progress forward.
Right.
And the reality is that we're all on a journey, and it sounds cliche. Gosh, it sounds cliche, but the reality is we are all on a journey. And so what happens is as we're along that journey, I feel like we always think that there's some arrival, right? That there's some destination. And Jim Collins is one of my favorite authors. And Jim Collins famously discusses that as an organization, which is the work he does, is thinking, you know, about large corporate organizations. But as an organization, the individuals within the organization need to scratch and claw to get to the mountaintop and then have the guts to say, what's our next climb?
Right.
As you're sweating and bleeding and just you're exhausted and you've hit this mountaintop, it is, yes, we've achieved what we thought we would, but what's next? And I think that that's so important. So I love your answer to that question. The final thing that I would say on failure is, for me, it is learning how to attack failure in such a way that it is methodical and almost detached from your personality. And so there's a couple of different ways. There's a few hacks that I've learned to do this along the way. One was by my mentor, who I worked for 7 years. And what he does is he says, look, it's just like my children. He's like, if they fall on their bicycle, I slow the process down. And I just try to make it very measurable and kind of baby step into what happened. So with my team, he's like, if there's something that occurs, I bring everybody in the room and say, guys, what could have gone better this time? I learned this next step from my brother, who's a different gentleman. And he said that while he was in the military, they did what was called an after action review. And it's a 5-step process. It's something that I've become really enamored with. And it's just very simply looking at it and saying, what was the plan? You know, okay, so what was the plan? Then what actually happened? Right. A lot of times you plan things out and they happen differently. Yeah. What went well? What went wrong? And then what can we do to improve the process? So that's the 5-step process. And I think that what that does is it creates a method for understanding things aren't always going to work out, but how are we going to continue to evolve and iterate? And that's, I think that's the important part of something not going the way that you feel like it should have in the first place. So feeling supported when it comes to your team. So you're a leader, you've got a great coordinator concept at the Art of Real Estate, and I've seen that in person. How do you make some of your staff members feel like they can have the permission to make mistakes, which I think is just as important, because if everybody's playing it safe and no one's advancing, what you're gonna end up having is you're gonna have a lot of complacency and maybe not have an excellent organization. So have you found a way to make your teammates feel supported as maybe they make mistakes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I think that's a constant moving target. You know, that's something that we continually assess. Like, okay, did you feel like once you get through a situation like that, did you feel supported? You know, one of the things that's worked really well for our team is we have a coach. We actually have two. Brad and I have a business coach that help us with just the kind of the business operations. But then we have an internal coach. And so all of our, and this is an expense, this is a perk that we provide to all of our teammates, just because we think it, our team, so our agents and our coordinators, everybody on our team gets an hour of coaching a month, more if they need it. And I think that's really been revolutionary in our culture, preserving our culture, dealing with failures, dealing with things that don't go well. And also, I think this is where people miss the boat. It's hard for somebody to do their job well if things aren't okay outside of work. And I think it's easy to be like, well, check your feelings at the door, right? But just from being a teacher, like a kid can't learn if they're hungry and a kid can't learn if they're tired and they can't learn if they're scared. Well, adults are just big kids for kids in bigger bodies, right? Like we cannot work to our highest potential if we're worried that, you know, our spouse isn't going to come home, or if we're, you know, in this big drama with our teenager. So I think the utilization of our coach has really been helpful in inner office conflict, as well as helping people work through outer office conflict. And I've seen that be very impactful. A lot of our, I mean, pretty much everybody on our team has said it over and over how much they really enjoy the coaching professionally and personally, and is that's helped them really perform better. And also it helps to have kind of that third party outsider view who can help pick apart maybe something that didn't work without that person feeling blamed or judged. And it really helps them kind of put their guard down and really go through the, hey, what was the plan? What worked? What didn't work? What can we do better? Instead of sitting down with their broker in charge being like, what the hell happened to that? You know? So it's kind of created this safe space where, you know, and then the coach can say, well, hey, is it okay if we bring so-and-so in since they were part of this? And, you know, let's have a dialogue and a safe conversation about how to make it better. So coaching has really been very instrumental in our firm.
Yeah, I love it. And I want to park on this for just a moment, Mary Lane, because I know the inner workings of your office may be a little bit differently than someone else does. And I want to make sure people understood and heard what you said. So a lot of realtors have coaches, but you have hired a professional to come into your office once a month to basically provide counseling to people in an appropriate business sense. And I think it's beautiful. I think it's wonderful. And I have experienced this from having some folks that have worked with me that'll actually come into our office, meet all the different individuals, and then help really mine for conflict is one of the episodes that we did on our podcast, episode 5 with Chris Oakley. mining for conflict is something that shouldn't be overlooked. It's going to happen in any organization, in any family, frankly. Yep. And when you try to cover up conflict or try to avoid it, it's just going to fester. And at some point, there's going to be an explosion. Right. And so I think it's really smart that you and Brad and the operating team at The Art of Real Estate have said, we're going to spend money to have a professional come into the office and make sure that that we don't get enamored with our own culture and realize that there's this problem sitting over here that we just didn't see. And I think as leaders, sometimes people are fearful of coming right to the leader and need that outlet. They really do. And I think it's wonderful.
Thanks.
So that touches on vulnerability and authenticity. Yeah. And I can tell that you're an authentic person just having interacted with you. Have you ever felt like that authenticity or that vulnerability has backfired on you? And if so, you know, kind of what are your thoughts and feelings around that? I think being a business leader is a tough environment at times. And I think you get people that at some point will take advantage of that. And so how do you handle keeping to your authentic self, but also making sure that you don't get taken advantage of by being vulnerable?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I noticed early on in the game when I first got into this lovely profession of ours that, you know, I was trying to figure out like why certain people were using the same agents when I was like, I don't understand. Like they don't return your call. Like I'm hearing you tell me they don't return your calls. They don't return your emails. Your house isn't selling. Like, I don't understand why you've used them for the last five transactions. And I started to figure out that, you know, in our market, there's still a sense of well, my dad used this person and my granddad used this person, so I have to use this person. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. But, you know, as I was buying houses and my friends were buying houses and I was getting a better sense of how people were picking their real estate agent, I started to think to myself, you know, when I buy a house, I can only use one lender and I can only use one attorney, right? So if the biggest gift that I can give to my friends and my family and my fellow clients is that it's okay not to use me, I'm not going to shun you from my life. You'll still be on the Christmas card list. You know, I'm not going to, you know, excommunicate you from my Facebook following. You know, I started seeing that some agents were doing that and I was like, oh my goodness, this person feels like they have to use you because you're holding them hostage and they're not allowed to make the decision. I mean, they're selling one of their biggest assets and they're feeling bullied into using a certain person. And I just thought, I don't ever want anybody to feel that way about me. And have I lost some clients over that? Absolutely. But I feel like by me being vulnerable and transparent enough to say, you know, there are a million real estate agents in this market of ours and it's okay. Like our friendship is bigger than that and like we'll be okay. And I tell my agents in my firm that too. I'm like, look, you can come here and vent. In this room, you can come here and you can be mad and you can be upset that so-and-so didn't use you, but out there, you give them a high five and you tell them that if they ever need anything, you're right there for them and they've made a great choice in their real estate selection and you wish them all the best on their real estate journey. Because the worst thing we can do for our profession and for the consumer is to get out there and make them feel uncomfortable and make them feel like they had no other choice but to use us because we were holding them hostage. Sometimes being that vulnerable with people and being that, you know, just open with them can, you know, can sometimes maybe cost you that listing or that buyer client. But I think at the end of the day, that client appreciates the freedom that you gave them to really make a decision and not feel like you were going to hold it against them. Because what other profession works like that? Like, oh, I went to this dentist and I didn't go to this dentist. So now this dentist isn't going to talk to me anymore. Like, that just seems silly to me.
Right. And I had this perfectly demonstrated for me with two experiences in a pretty short period of time. One was we were doing this big remodel of our home, which included an addition. You're seeing part of it behind us. And we interviewed a couple of general contractors. One was a very good friend of mine. The other was a recommended referral from the neighborhood who had done like six or seven homes on our block and has now since gone on to do like another 10 or 12 homes in the immediate neighborhood. And we ended up picking the person, that was the neighborhood expert, not my friend. And I felt really, really bad. And I struggled to tell my friend that, but it was something that we felt like was the right thing to do for us because we knew this was the person that we felt most comfortable with. Then I had someone that was a repeat client choose one of my bigger competitors to sell the property that I helped them buy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. Well, and I felt like, gosh, I want to have my clients be loyal to me. And mm-hmm. at that time, in that particular moment, he felt like they were demonstrating what he needed the most, mm-hmm. which was some analytical research. And it was a gut check for me. I was like, he's telling me, he's giving me some candid feedback. And we had that 20-minute mm-hmm. phone call that you had talked about earlier in our mm-hmm. discussion, where I said, could I just have some feedback? I need to just hear what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I took it to heart, and there's no hard feelings there. I think that the worst thing you can do as a business owner is kind of have this, they're dead to me approach. Right. And I've had some people do that to me, and it feels horrible.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean because they just chose to work with someone else on one transaction that they didn't value what you did. It's just at that time, that was their decision, and that was the right thing for them to do. And so I think that that authenticity is important. And just learning that people make decisions, right or wrong, but they're going to make those decisions. And I think by and large, you're going to be selected. I'll be selected more often when we're working as a geographic farmer, as an expert in an area, as someone who knows what's going on in that area, as opposed to continuing to completely rely on its sphere of influence. And I'm not advocating against that, but I do think that some people rely too heavily on their sphere of influence, and they don't build this continual farming mechanism that's going to continue to yield results for them. So I think that you should have a combo of that. And I think that that's important for realtors. So last question that I have, and it's one of my favorites. I always hold it to the end because I've learned through my own experience that I've had many mentors and guides along the way that have helped me get unstuck as I make my career progression. And so this idea of dear younger me, if Mary Lane Sloan could write a letter to herself, or even to someone who's 22 that's starting in the industry, that's, you know, a decade behind you and is trying to figure out how to make this world work, what advice would you give to someone that's 22? It's that advice you wish you knew when you were 22.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty perfect when I was 22.
Of course. In my own mind, right?
Okay. So I have always been an achiever, right? So from the time I really could walk, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. So I kind of put my head down and just worked towards that goal. And I think if I could tell my 22-year-old self something, I would say, just breathe, like just breathe for a second, right? Because not that I mean, it obviously got me to the path that I'm on, but I feel like there's so much to explore and there's so much out there. And I think sometimes in your 20s, you know, you're getting out of school and you're like picking a major and you're trying to figure out like everything in like 2 years, right? Like I've just graduated, I have these degrees and now I'm gonna be this, you know? And it's like, sometimes I think you just need to breathe and take a second. And it's okay to say, I don't know what I wanna do right now. Or, you know, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna try this until I find my passion. And I just think, your 22-year-old self, you've got all this energy and you want to conquer the world and you've got all this confidence. Sometimes it takes a second to just like sit in that for a second instead of constantly moving to the next thing and trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to be when you grow up, because it could change.
Well, absolutely. And clearly a change is not bad. If it's something that occurs and it evolves and it feels like that you're being led to try something new, that's okay. And I think you should embrace it. And I've found that with good mentors, with what I like to call influencers, people that speak into your life, and that could be someone at church that's a respected business person. It could be, you know, a family member that's known you long enough and well enough to tell you something that might be a little difficult for you to hear. Yeah. Or it could be a coworker, someone that is literally on the path that you want to be on, but they're 5 or 10 years ahead of you. And they almost feel like that older brother or sister or cousin that can give you that advice. So I love that. And I agree. Sometimes we just get so excited about what we can accomplish that we kind of forget, like, we're here in this space and we've got some things to learn. And I think that's probably the most important thing, is just to understand that you are here. This is a long-term thing,
right?
And it might change and it might evolve. One of the famous quotes that I love, it was reminded to me by one of my mentors, but it actually comes from Bill Gates, where people often overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year and far underestimate what they can accomplish in 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we all approach it. It's like, I want to get all this stuff done. And
right.
So I completely agree. And I think that's great advice for anybody listening that's just getting into the industry, or maybe they feel stuck, you know, go maybe seek out that person that's like Mary Lane or myself in your life that can speak some truth into your life and isn't bashful about telling you some things that you may not want to hear.
Yeah.
So I love that. So I get a gift for almost all of my guests, and we didn't really talk about this, but the gift that I'm giving to you is a book that I love to read. You spoke about Duckworth's book, Grit.
Okay.
This book is called Business Boutique, and it's written by an author named Christy Wright, based out of Nashville, Tennessee. And the Business Boutique is a woman's guide for making money doing what she loves. And it's specifically tailored to women entrepreneurs. And I think you're going to love it. So I'm excited to share that with you. And it's an easy read. I've read it, even though I'm a guy, you know, I read it, and there's a lot of universal truths in there, but it's got the women's perspective on it, that it's okay to be a mom at times, and it's okay also to go to work. And I think people struggle with that. Yeah. So Mary Lane, I really appreciate you spending time with us today. This interview is hugely impactful, and I hope it gives encouragement and empowerment to young females that want to have an amazing family life, but also want to accomplish some things and help people in the workplace. And that's what I think that this interview does for folks, is it encourages them that they can do both, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And I love that. And so for Mary Lane Sloan from The Art of Real Estate in Columbia, South Carolina, I'm Kyle Malnati, your host. And as I love to say, we will see you around the neighborhood.